we sometimes in our own realities look at people that we think have something more than what we have. They've come further than how we feel that we have come. We look and we make comparisons with other people, and we say to ourselves, I should have what the apple tree down the road has and what the rosebush has and what the plum has and the apricot and the almond has. But again, even though we're all family, we're all human beings, we're still all different and we still have to go down our own pathways. So that is one thing, several things I think we can definitely see from the plants, including, again, that realization that growth and our growth takes whatever time it takes for us.
Welcome to Task Time Energy, the purpose-filled productivity podcast. This podcast is about time management, procrastination, motivation, discipline, habits, and all kinds of topics that fall under this umbrella of productivity. My name is Scott Miller. I'll be your host. Thank you for joining us today.
Welcome, everyone. Today, we have Derek Haynes as our guest. Derek is also known as the crazy botanist, also known as the chocolate botanist. Derek has a degree in biology from NC State University, works in vaccine and therapeutics development using non-traditional plant-based technologies. Derek, I was reading some of the information about you online and says you were inspired by notable Black plant researchers and scientists like George Washington Carver and Percy Julian. You've been featured in The Guardian and Life Hacker. You've been a guest on renowned podcasts like Black in the Garden and In Defense of Plants. You also work with the North Carolina Botanical Garden to develop educational workshops on botany and plant science. And that's kind of how we met. My wife works at the North Carolina Botanical Garden, and I got to see a workshop that you did. And I'm very, very happy and very excited to have you here on the podcast. So thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for having me. I am also excited and happy to be here.
Anything else you'd like to add to that just little brief intro?
You know, I am a whole botanist. And as long as you know that, I think that just centers everything else great.
A whole botanist.
A whole botanist.
Tell me more about that.
You know, being a full botanist, a whole botanist is a phenomenal thing for me. Because science is a center, one of the many centers of my world. When it comes to part of my mindset and my world, I look at the science as, again, like a big, and I say a center, but there's so many, there's like a couple of big centers, my religiosity and just my science-tism, if I can just use it as a word, and I will, that is part of my world. So being a whole botanist is a term that I've often used to just literally say people like, hey, I'm a legitimate botanist. This isn't a title I made up to be cute on the internet, but I have went into some debt, 40,000-ish of it. If any of you, you know, listening are like, let me donate to him, 40,000-ish of it to say like, hey, this is my degree. This is what I wanted to do. I wanted to become a plant biologist. I wanted to become a botanist and to live and breathe for the plants as they live and breathe for us.
Wow, that's wonderful. Live and breathe for the plants as they live and breathe for us.
I know. You think I would have wrote it before I got here.
It's interesting, too, when you think about botany, right? And not like, I don't know how much most average person knows about botany, but I think maybe you hear botanist, oh, that's somebody who grows plants. But I mean, so you have to understand the taxonomy of these plants, right? Mm-hmm. The Latin names, the connections between different species of plants and how they're related. Mm-hmm. You understand, I imagine, like the anatomy of plants, the leaves, the flowers, oh, the stems, the roots, right? Understanding that in detail. Cellular biology, chemistry, photosynthesis, you know things about this?
You know, chemistry, I hate it. That's a kind of sore subject. But yes, you know, when people think of plant biology, Scott, I want the viewer to imagine a Venn diagram. It's kind of a three-piece thing. So we have plants that is at the center of all of it. So me as a plant biologist, as a botanist, I am the science and the history of the plant. So like you said, the anatomy, the reason that the plants are living and breathing, right? The photosynthetic qualities, the history of these plants. Why do we use these plants in a certain way? Where do they come from? What are their origins? In addition to their chemical components. And then we have a horticulturalist who is more focused on growing these plants for beauty and for money. So you're right. Growing these flowers, you're growing all these plants to make somebody happy. Like all of the different houseplants that we enjoy, that we love, right? Somebody's horticulturalist did that. And then we think of more of the agriculturalist. The agriculturalist is a person that's growing not only these plants maybe for beauty, but they're growing them on a large scale for beauty and or food, right? So we think of our farmers that are often in need of our support. So like go to your local farmers market. This is a plug. And those different centers are again surrounded by plants. So me as a plant biologist, if you are coming to me for like general plants tips and tricks on how to get your garden beautiful, like I know that, but I also go deeper into just the myriad of histories of the plants, how we infect or affect them rather, and how they affect us, which is ethnobotany. That is my big gym jam, as it were.
Okay, yeah. So the connection between the plants and how they affect us and how we affect them, and that human-plant connection.
Oh, yes.
Which is very important.
Super important. Yeah. Because that history dictates how we use these plants. How have they been used across millennia? And how have they moved us, whether it was in a great way or a horrendous way?
Right. Yeah, I was even going to say, like, another important aspect, I imagine, of your education and your work is knowing, like, how plants connect with their environment, how they affect the environment, how the environment is affected by them, including us, right? And it sounds like from what you're saying that, you know, as a botanist, you might be assisting horticulturists. You might be assisting agriculture, right? You have the ability, the knowledge, the background to assist in any of those areas and choose, you know, where maybe you want to specialize or
most definitely
want to help. Yeah,
like it's definitely transferable knowledge. Like we are three separate houses, but we still have the keys to each other's doors.
Excellent.
It's kind of a good way to think about it. I definitely got to write that one down, so I can't wait to listen to this so I can remember and take note.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll keep that one in quotes.
Yes.
So and one of the things that I know you do well, and by the way, people heard my dogs bark, and this is not some kind of fancy high-tech recording studio. We're sitting here in my kitchen. And we're trying to keep the dogs quiet, but if you heard her bark a minute ago, that's because we're just real people here. So one of the things that you do well is, you know, looking at all this technical knowledge, the taxonomy, the cellular biology and things like that, and explaining it. You have a skill and a talent for explaining it in a way that someone with a non-scientific background can relate to really well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It seems like something that you really enjoy doing.
I do, because here's my thing, Scott. If me as a scientist, if I am having a conversation with a non-scientist, and again, we talk about the $40,000 of debt that I've been into going to North Carolina State University. If I am having a conversation with a non-scientist and they have left basically knowing that I'm obviously a scientist because I used a bunch of $1,000 words that they have never heard before and concepts that I didn't bother to break down, then that conversation was pointless. So when it comes to my mindset, I want anyone I run into to have an understanding of what I know. And because the knowledge shouldn't be sequestered behind some iron door that's only accessible by a degree being entered into it. It should be open and available for all of us, for those of us who, again, decided to go into debt for it, and for those of us who are like, hey, I have kind of a curiosity. Can you explain cellular biology to me of plants? Can you tell me what a stromata is? Can you tell me what phloem and xylem do? Can you explain to me topoisomerases and totipotency? Can you tell me all of these things and break them down? Or tell me why the latest trend of plant things that somebody told me will kill my cancers and make my arms grow back, why this thing will or won't work? Like, can you break that down to me? And in that way, it helps people who, again, don't have a scientific background be more alert, in my opinion, to any foolishness or fallacies that they come across. In addition to just make better choices. They can make better choices in life because they have more knowledge of how the world works.
Yeah, which is so important. We're bombarded by so much information these days, and not all of it is reliable. So having some type of practical understanding of science, right, is important for people. Even if you don't plan to, you know, go to NC State and become a biologist, exactly. Right? Just having some understanding is important. So, you know, we the focus of this podcast, as we've said, is time and mm-hmm. productivity in general, but really, especially looking at different people's perspectives on time and mm-hmm. different perspectives other than the ones that most of us may be used to, right? Our default way of thinking about time, for mm-hmm. example, we all have maybe a default way of looking at it. So looking at it from other angles, other perspectives. And as I've told you, I'm really interested in anything that you want to share about, you know, time from a natural point of view, from a natural scale, you know, uh-huh. I mean, like thinking about trees that live for thousands of years, right? Like trees that have been around. You read about things that happened in history, mm-hmm. and this tree was alive and standing when that happened, oh, right?
Yes. That's crazy.
And the natural cycles that we see all around us and kind of take for granted and don't really pay attention to, but, you know, we're sitting here in my kitchen right now, and there are trees and plants all around us that are living their own lives according to their own schedule. So, I don't know, what do you think that the average person can learn from any of that?
That is a very big question, and I hope I can give an answer big enough to answer it. When it comes to this plant life that we are all in, it is so epic for me to realize that forests that I have grown up with that, you know, eventually have been bulldozed over to make way from some other storage unit or a highway took however long it took for them to grow, for them to develop, right? So I come from the coast, I'm come from New Bern, and again, it's just surrounded by trees and forests, particularly the Croatan National Forest. And when I think of the species of trees that I see that have, again, like you said, been established for decades or centuries, it's amazing to think that from one seed, one instance, one bit of potential, one spark of potential, that tree then became something that is an epic part of my memory. That its time existed before me, its growth existed before me. And when it comes to that concept of time, what does it look like to that tree? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And how does that look versus the understory plants? So we can often think of big sequoias that have been growing for decades. But what about the mushrooms that are quietly growing in the understories that have been here for, again, just as long as the trees? And it may be, again, generation upon generation that are still growing while this one individual of a tree has been, you know, existing in this space. But the fungi are there too. The mosses and the ferns are there too. And they are existing and they are growing. So I think when we consider time, dear Scott, it is important to know that time is variable to whoever is being there to perceive it. Mm-hmm. Our reality is our perception. And the perception of time to, again, a massive sequoia is different to maybe microstegium that is growing in the forest and taking it over. And that may be something relatable to a Japanese honeysuckle, which I enjoyed as a kid, and or dandelion, right? Any of those species. But that still may be something that may be related or different to the mosses, to the Spanish mosses, to the ferns, to the various shelf fungi that we can all talk about. So with that, to relate that to a personal standpoint, at least for me, and something I've been working on through some prayer and reflection lately, is my time is literally just that. It is mine. As if I'm a species of plant or fungi, I can't look at an oak and say, well, if I'm an oak, what does a Japanese maple do? Those are not the same. If I'm a apple, I may be related to a strawberry because they're in the same family. They're both roses, right? But I can't really say how that I should live this rose life of a strawberry when I'm a whole tree. I'm an apple tree. I'm made to be an apple tree. So with that and that epic realization comes, I guess, my navigation. That realization leads to navigation. And from there, I can try to really dictate my journey as need be, leaving room for growth with whatever twists and turns come. Mm-hmm. And definitely jump in because I feel like I'm going on a tangent, but this is just happening because I wrote a bunch of stuff down, but apparently I'm not going to read off of that today. So growth, navigation. So what does that mean? So when we think of the different growth cycles of plants, again, thinking from a strawberry to a apple tree, okay? An apple tree takes, I believe, 6 years now with some of the species they have that are grafted onto rootstocks that grow quicker to get an actual edible apple that you can eat and enjoy and put in your apple pies. Versus a strawberry is a season, right? You put them down, you get your seed started, you get your plants from the store, and bow, you have strawberries. A season, a couple of months versus years, even with the older species, which was 20 years, that's a big investment. But apple trees live longer than our strawberry plants. So again, what does that look like? It's both equatable, but again, we sometimes in our own realities look at people that we think have something more than what we have. They've come further than how we feel that we have come. We look and we make comparisons with other people, and we say to ourselves, I should have what the apple tree down the road has and what the rosebush has and what the plum has and the apricot and the almond has. But again, even though we're all family, we're all human beings, we're still all different and we still have to go down our own pathways. So that is one thing, several things I think we can definitely see from the plants, including, again, that realization that growth and our growth takes whatever time it takes for us. And regardless of whether it's a couple of months or half a decade or a full decade, at the end of the day, the result is still just as delicious as it was in any way.
That's wonderful. I wanna try to replay some of that back because there were so many good things in there. One of the things you said that I loved was realization leads to navigation. Right. So we gain these. Did I say that correctly? We gain these understandings, and then that becomes something that we can use to guide us in life. Talking about, and it's interesting because, you know, sometimes I look out the window and I see, oh, there's nature, right? Mm-hmm. It's all this wonderful, like, soup of things that are happening, but it's a bunch of individual species and events and timelines. And I love how you looked at that, and you're looking at how, like you're saying, an apple tree is not a strawberry, right? They're existing on, they look similar, it's related, but existing on different timelines. And, you know, the apple tree is not going to try to be a strawberry, and the strawberry is not going to try to be an apple tree. And I love the lesson that you're bringing out of that, which is individual human beings can be like that, right? We have that tendency to compare ourselves to others and say, oh, look at what these people my age are doing. Or look at what these people younger than me are doing.
Exactly.
And they're just on a different timeline than we are.
Look, the biggest thing, they are on a different timeline than we are. Yeah. They're on a different part of the phylogenetic tree as we are. We're all related. We're all pulling from a similar origin. Again, whether it's on a biological scale, right, having a common ancestor, or on a more esoteric scale of we have a common goal of wanting to be successful. And that common goal unites us all. But how that looks, the DNA of it, how that comes out can be different, literally for all of us. Mm-hmm. It can be relatable, but it can be different. Mm-hmm. And we just have to go with the flow, as it were. Go with our own evolution, go with our own growth cycles, and just keep it moving.
Yeah. I mean, every species out there is basically trying to reproduce to keep their species going, right? Mm-hmm. To pass on their genetics. So, you know, that's their version of success. Just like we all, like you're saying, we all want to succeed in one way. And that's something that unites us. And yet we have our own ways of doing that, just like all these, you know, different plants we see out there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
I love another thing that you said. You mentioned briefly talking about these forests, you know, around where you grew up and, you know, knowing that these trees were out there before you, these things came before you, they're still there, right? And so looking at nature on a different scale, it's kind of reminds me of, I'd love to get an astronomer or an astrophysicist on this show and start talking about, like, you know, planetary, you know, space time scales, right? Galactic time scales, because you talk about things that are like a human lifespan. All of human history, all of like our modern history as human beings writing and building things, and, you know, it's all like a snap of the fingers in terms of like the life of a star.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And even in our own natural world, the world around us, we see these much longer, and just the reason I think that's so useful to think about is because there's a sense of peace that comes from that. right? When I think about there are these things that are happening that are so much beyond my own experience, right? And I often think about space, and, you know, stars being created and, you know, galaxies being created. But when we think about just the natural world and these things that are happening on a much greater scale, just kind of outside of what we normally consider in our day-to-day existence, there's some peace that comes from that for me. I don't know if you feel the same thing.
I think it's more of a, not necessarily peace for me, but more grounding. So when I go when I look at something deeply scientific, like, you know, the life of a star, or again, thinking of the botany world, like just the growth of a species, the production of certain trees, the chemicals they produce, something like that, it gives me a grounding, a place to just kind of just sit and be like, wow, like this is amazing. It's kind of a place of childhood wonder for me, and a return to that curiosity that we all used to have. And sometimes we get dull with because of just, you know, where life is, and especially now where we have the world at our fingertips at any given moment. So when I do go into a place of peace for me, just being in a forest, being surrounded by trees, being surrounded by plants is just amazing, because that's just a grounding place for me for that. But when I look through a forest and I think of the different species that are existing, it's literally a place of like, wow, like y'all are just out here chilling, doing your thing, being blown in the wind, maybe being eaten by a bear or deer, and life is just going on. Like, nature is just doing what nature does, trying to live and exist. And if that can happen for it, then I can do the same.
I love that you talk about a sense of wonder. It's something that, you know, I've been fortunate to know quite a few people who are scientists in different disciplines. And I think it's easy for the average person to think about scientists as these kind of maybe stuffy people wearing lab coats. But I mean, everybody I can think of off the top of my head that I've known who's a scientist who does science for a living, they all share that sense of wonder, right? And like, you know, you go outside in the woods and you may, like an average person, you know, not somebody who doesn't have a science background, you go out in the woods and you see certain things and you understand maybe a certain amount of what's going on. But then to talk with somebody who has a science background and understands all the things that are going on so many different levels and so many different activities that are happening all at once and all the things that we don't understand and that sense of wonder that comes from that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess I'll put it like this to respond to that. No matter how stuffy a person is, and a lot of scientists are just sometimes boring, no matter how stuffy they are, the reason they became a scientist was to try to quiet that curiosity or to feed it, right? And it can never, at least again, my experience, I don't think it can ever be fed, because that feeding is just learning and trying to get some new discovery. And there are some of us who are getting in because we want our names to be great and all of that jazz, right? But a lot of us, I hope, are in it to feed that curiosity. And it can be a unquenchable thing. Mm-hmm. So when we go into that sense of wonder, what I try to do is to really show folks how excited I am about science, because I can think of other scientific communicators who did the same, right, who were showing me that science is cool and exciting and magical, right? Mm-hmm. And in the same way that I enjoyed Harry Potter and Captain Planet and all the magic and lore of that, or the X-Men or Spider-Man, I also enjoyed Bill Nye and the Magic School Bus and Beekman's Lab. Mm-hmm. And seeing just that wonder on either side, you know, I can't necessarily ride a school bus off into the wild blue yonder and just fly kids around because, you know, legal reasons, that would be terrible. I can't, you know, go to Hogwarts because it's not real. But what I can do is to share my hunger for curiosity through science with other people, mm-hmm, and share it in a way that makes people say, like, wow, this is amazing.
Well, there's so much here to talk about. I'm really curious, though. You said you wrote some things down, and when you first came here tonight, you said you had some things that you were thinking about talking about. I would love to just open it up for you to share anything that you were thinking about as you know, we talked about doing this discussion.
And, you know, originally, and this is where time management plays a role for me, and time plays a role for me. I'm a creative and I'm a scientist, and I play a dual role, right? And when I think of playing that dual role, it's like considering industrial hemp. Industrial hemp plays multiple roles within the landscape, whether you're using it for shirts or somebody's shampoo, you're braiding ropes, you are smoking it or eating gummies to feel better. Same with its crazy party-loving cousin weed. If you're doing something with it, it plays multiple roles, like several plants can, multiple plants can, right? So when I first decided to come here, being the procrastinator I am at heart, about 20 minutes ago, I said, I told this man I'd be here and I would talk about climate change. And I didn't read anything like I should have. So I started reading and I started taking notes and kind of like thinking of what I wanted to say. But in all honesty, even though I could go into the stuff I wanted, I'm at peace with what I've said right now. And I mean, we can definitely talk about it if you still want. But I'm at peace with what I've said right now because there's times where I will prepare just to have something to prepare. But there are times, and I'm grateful to God for this, where I will literally just have some expressive verbal diarrhea, for lack of a better term. And it'll be like, this is an explanation of what I'm feeling. And additionally, and I will mention one of these points, even though I just said I wouldn't, I have been at a place of dormancy within my creative life, right? What does that mean? Here on the East Coast, during the colder winter months, some trees will go into dormancy. They are deciduous, so they're not evergreen, meaning their leaves are there continuously. The leaves will drop once the temperatures are sufficient. They may change colors. Some northerners will love to see that, right? They love to see the colors change. Some people who don't see that. And the leaves will drop, and the tree, to, you know, a non-botanical person or a child, not to say they're both the same, but will look dead. Mm-hmm. It will look just inactive. Now, that tree may still be growing. That plant may still be growing. If it's a perennial plant that just dies back after the winter, the top part of the plant above the soil will just disappear, crumble up and die. But pending nothing crazy happens, once the season gets back for it to come back, it will reawaken, it will resurge, it'll resurrect, it'll come back. So I've been in a place, Scott, where creatively, I have had to take a break. I've had to go dormant. I have created some phenomenal stuff, classes, podcasts, I've been on just phenomenal, phenomenal things. But expending that energy, like our trees do, like our plants do, all those sugars that go into that, all that photosynthetic energy that goes into that, I had to really transition from evergreen to deciduous in order to keep myself sane. In addition to, I had some other outside stuff, losses in my family that took me to a place to stop and say, I just need to breathe. Mm-hmm. I kept moving through a lot of losses, and it was at a point where I was like, okay, great. I need to, again, drop my leaves, conserve energy, and work for me. So, person listening to this, listener, it is perfectly okay to be inactive. And especially during this whole Pomeranian we're in, you know, I don't like to use the other word, this Pomeranian we're in, because a lot of people at the beginning were like, oh, this is your time. If you don't have a job right now because the Pomeranian canceled your job, go and do this and do that and do this instead of sitting at home. But there's times where it is perfectly okay to be quote unquote lazy. It's perfectly okay to do nothing with your time, nothing of great use. It is perfectly okay to binge watch all of Netflix before they raise the price again. It is perfectly okay to go out and just sit back and drink a glass of lemonade. It's fine, because that dormancy, that self-care, can lead to a greater management of time, a greater resurrection, a greater thing. So when the trees come back, when they have, again, dropped their leaves, they are conserving that energy. They're using the energy they had stored up for, you know, the time like that. And they come back. They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I know I don't. And I'm a whole botanist. But a lot of us don't go out, I'm assuming. Like, none of us will go out and look at a tree like an oak and be like, I remember when you didn't have leaves. We look at it and we're like, oh, the oak. I'm going to sit under its shade. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it while it's here. We don't think of the maples and say, you're going to lose your leaves soon. If it's getting close to that time, yeah, we see it coming. Yeah. But if it's the high time in the summer, we're just sitting there again, enjoying the leaves, enjoying the beauty. So enjoy the beauty when you can, and when you can't, go dormant.
I am so glad that you brought that up, because as I was thinking about us having this conversation, I was reminded of a conversation I had with somebody a number of years ago. It was very similar, and I don't have to repeat that whole story, because the way you just said it was so, so beautiful. But the idea that, yeah, like in nature, there are dormant times. The trees go dormant during the winter, right? The beautiful oak tree, the beautiful maple tree that you see goes dormant during the winter, just sits there and nothing happens. And so many people, you know, people that I speak with, people that I coach, and I coach a lot of very successful people who have a really hard time letting themselves relax and slow down and recharge their batteries. They have a hard time dropping their leaves because, and I think, I mean, a lot of different reasons why it happens, but I think a lot of it comes from They're worried about what other people are going to think. They're worried about being judged for taking that time to slow down. And I love the way you just said it. You know, in the middle of the summer, when we're looking at that big, beautiful oak tree sitting in the shade of that big, beautiful oak tree, we're not looking at it and saying, oh, that, you know, didn't have any leaves, you know, 6 months ago. We don't remember. We don't care, right? We just see the beauty of that oak tree for what it is in that moment. And I think people... it's a great lesson that, you know, when we need to go dormant, when we need to drop our leaves, when we need to take that time to relax and recharge, we can do it, and it's going to help us be more productive. It's going to help us achieve what we want to achieve. And when that happens, when we're being productive, when we're able to achieve what we achieve, what we want to achieve, nobody's even going to remember that we took that time ourselves. They're not.
And I mean, going even deeper with what you said about, you know, people are worried about what others will think. The oaks are not concerned with what the pines think, right? The sycamore doesn't look at the dogwood and say like, hey, are we going to do it this year, right? The cypress, right? The bald cypress and the juniper are not looking at the rose bush and saying, look at you, you pitiful thing, you. Like, it's not... it's not a game of or a competition per se, because even with the evergreens or the deciduous trees, they all have their role. They all have their roles. Whether they stop or they keep going, they all have their role. So if we acknowledge that and we look at the truth in that and the truth in ourselves, then we can see like, okay, with my role, am I being effective? If I keep going, will I be effective? Will I continue to make the impact as I'm supposed to? If the answer is no, go dormant. That was a thing that I had to look at because, again, trying to keep up on the social media space and trying to stay relevant and present and hoping to go viral and all these other things. There was a certain point where it's like, I'm just creating stuff just to create, but it's just half-hearted. It's lackadaisical. It's not really giving what it's supposed to have given. So when I really had to take a moment and come to Jesus meeting with myself, I had to be like, okay, Derek, like you really just need to sit still. And it wasn't something I wanted to do, but it was something I knew I needed to do. Because again, if the person who was like, hey, I just got to keep going, if you burn out, what happens, right? So if the oak tree, you know, I mean, a lot of us are familiar with oaks, just dies because it overexerted itself. It used all its energy up and it decided to keep going through winter, even though the light spectrum wasn't right and the weather was too cold for it and it had to really struggle to keep up. If it decided to keep going, what would happen? Would it be able to produce those acorns for the next year? And those acorns are literally the chances for the next generation to go forward. And when we think of, I'm trying to think of other species that animals eat. So like different apples or oranges, right? That an animal will eat, they'll ingest some of the seeds and they'll walk away and those seeds will get pooped out later. And it's like, oh yay, like it's great. When that happens, if the poppies overexerted themselves, if the apples overexerted themselves and could not make that fruit, or they didn't make enough fruit for the animals to eat it and it to get far enough away from the main tree, its mother, its father, whatever you want to call it, its parent, what would happen? You've lost the race. Your impact, your immortality that like some of us may be looking for and trying to stay ever present in time is gone, right? It disappears. It's no more. And at that point, you're just a dead tree in the woods. Now, at some point, parts of your being would be kind of reused and recycled by the decomposition cycle, but that's just helping something else and not giving way to your own stand in this creative world.
Yeah. So maybe by giving ourselves some rest, we're able to serve as an inspiration for someone and not just a bad example.
Exactly.
A warning, right?
A warning
yeah.
story.
It's so interesting to think about, you know, especially when you start looking about the interactions between between plants and animals, right? Mm-hmm. So like, and how dependent they are on each other and how the interactions between trees and fungi, mm-hmm. right? And how all these different things that you see out there are interacting and supporting each other. And yet each one is just doing its job. I love what you said, like the oak tree doesn't care what the pine trees are doing, you know, and they're focusing on doing their own thing the way that they need to do it. Mm-hmm. And the oak tree drops its leaves and doesn't care if the pine tree is still green, right? And there's such, and yet they all work together, right? And they're all doing their part in this much bigger whole, and they all do it together so well. And yeah, what lessons can we learn from that, right?
So many.
Social media, you talked about social media, right? Like people, even when someone's, quote, relaxing and posting about it on social media, it's still they're doing something. Oh, look at this party I'm going to.
Exactly.
Look at this vacation I'm going on. It's still doing. I mean, how often do people just say, hey, I'm taking a nap and post that on Twitter? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe people do, but nobody notices.
There are some people that do. It's insane. I'll say that. It's sometimes insane, sometimes it's necessary. Because there's times where I'm repotting plants, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this would make good content. I should really, because I need more content. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I don't feel like setting up to be, you know, presentable for social media. I just want to sit here and repot this plant and go on about my business. And then there are other days where I'm like, you know what? It would be nice to interact with my people on social media. Like, let me jump in here, show them, you know, me repotting this plant. We talk real quick, laugh and joke and get it over with. But I think you're right. People need to live in the moment. I think that's what you're leading to.
Yeah, well, I think live in the moment is important, but also remember what you're looking at. When we look at social media, we're looking at people who have an agenda, right? They're posting. I do the same thing. I post stuff on social media for, you know, to promote what I do. So there are a lot of people that are doing it with a certain intention, and other people are just doing it to say, hey, look at me. Look at the cool thing I'm doing, right? But it's a very skewed vision of people's lives, right? And you may not be seeing what they're really doing to the times when they are dormant. Because being dormant by its nature doesn't mean you're out there posting on social media. Being dormant means you are just there with yourself doing what you need to recharge yourself. And we don't always see that, you know. And people I know who are successful very often are good at that. Like the people who are not burning themselves out, but the people who are genuinely sustainably long-term successful, they're doing things to recharge their batteries. They're going dormant when they need to. And I think there's a bit of a skewed reality that some of us see where we don't think people are doing that, or we don't think we should be allowed to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I think we've had a great conversation. I want to be respectful of your time. I want to be respectful of our listeners' time. I'm trying to keep these relatively short, but there is so much good stuff in that conversation that we just had, so many good lessons. I'm looking forward to listening to this again and hear replaying everything that was in there, because it was a great conversation. I really appreciate you coming today.
Well, thank you.
I'm very grateful for everything you shared.
Thank you for having me. That's all I have to say. I am so grateful for the platform and being featured. You just have no idea.
Excellent. Thank you. I wanted to start asking people one question at the end. Mm-hmm. What is your big dream right now?
My big dream, if you don't dream big, number one, you shouldn't even dream. You should just nap. When it comes to me, I want to be to the next generation what Bill Nye or again, Beekman's lab, and even recently Kyle Hill was, or and is to me, which is just that scientific inspiration, that inspiration to say, I can be a scientist too. When it comes to having Black representatives, there's historic ones, but I don't believe I have ever had a Black science teacher. Like in elementary school, you know, teachers would teach science and everything else. But as far as like high school, a pure science teacher, at college, a pure science professor, if someone's listening and they're like, you had me, please forgive me, I forgot. But if there was not one that I can think of, it was like, this is my science teacher. Again, middle school, elementary school, of course, there were some. But as far as like you are, that's just pure science. I can't reference that. So I want that to be there for Black children to say like, hey, you know, scientist, and I'm doing it. I want to be able to successfully take care of my family, you know, be able to say, hey, y'all don't have to go to these jobs anymore. You can just sit at home and money's there, right? To be able to say, let's travel, let's go somewhere, let's eat something, let's be able to survive, because unfortunately, we need money to survive in this world that we live in. Very ignorant that we had a world full of resources and we still called that and said, let's give people credit scores and make it like that and bills because everything is free, but we're going to charge people for it. And finally, just to literally have multiple places of peace and joy within my life. And that's more so than just, you know, taking care of my family, because I do love that. It's one of my love languages, acts of service. And that's more than just, you know, being an example and a role model, but to literally be able to say like, hey, you know, Scott, come over. This is my house. I got all these plants here. You know, I got a little acreage. Hey, y'all, we're going to go and get on a cruise ship and go look at some random island of plants or any other thing. Just again, that brings me peace and joy. I just want to live on a constant cruise ship, if as it were, of peace and joy, of love and happiness forever.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that dream with us.
Thank you.
And I hope that every piece of that comes true for you and becomes your reality.
I pray so.
If you would like to know more about our guest, Derek Haynes, or you want to get in touch with him, you can find him on Instagram at The Chocolate Botanist, or visit his website, thecrazybotanist.com. If you're looking to find the path of growth that is right for you, if you want to become more comfortable dropping your leaves and becoming dormant when the time is right, if you want to be that oak tree that doesn't need to compare itself to the evergreens, then visit my website, scottmillercoaching.com, or send me an email. My address is scott@scottmillercoaching.com.